Sorry about that. So how are things going, Steven? Any luck with what we discussed last time? You have some more data for us to look at?
Yeah, I gave it rates based on whether it was within the threshold, above the higher threshold. So you can see the points. Granted, this is based on the derivatives, of course. So,
well, I think we need a starting point. The last one?
Yeah. Maybe.
Should I look at the previous one?
It might be a better comparison for us for checking for seeing if this is actually a good way to detect phases by comparing it to the miss rate analysis.
Okay, the second guy?
Yeah.
Okay, so
miss rates.
So I remember we went at coarser granularities for calculating miss rates, right? So averaging over larger and larger granularities. It's a simple averaging,
right,
not
yeah.
the exponential or
right,
decayed
yeah.
averaging
the
that
thing.
You were talking
same
about.
Yeah.
The simple averaging over some fixed size window. And as the window increases, we see, no, that's not what's going on here.
One question I have is, what's the cache size? Because that's important to determine all these numbers.
We talked about that, was it last time?
Yep.
Currently, all these are being done through a 4 gigabyte. All that. But no, 1 means that's within the between area of 5 and 20%, and if it gets to 2, it's above 20%. This is something that I figured would show where the derivatives were for these particular areas.
Right, so we should probably fill in JSON about how we, why we chose thresholds for detecting phase change.
If we're going to do that, then we should show our derivatives.
Okay. Which one do you want to look at?
No, those are the miss rates, the derivatives.
Oh, the derivatives, yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah, these are the pure derivatives of the miss rates.
They're simple derivatives taken at a rate of 2,000 from the miss rates that we had before. So I would see 2,000 every 2,000.
Yeah.
How
okay,
far
so the average value of those, yeah, right.
So the simple derivatives.
Yeah,
but my question is, what's the if we look at the cache size to be 4 gigabytes, you say?
Mm.
Why 4 gigabytes? Are we seeing anything different if you say instead of 4 gigabytes, choosing a larger or smaller?
We've seen some differences in the miss rates at smaller.
Right.
Then we did research and found that the homes that we're using for IO reduplication,
right,
that we took it from, was a working set of, what was it, 3-point-something gigabytes, was it?
Yeah, so the total access data was about 4 gigabytes.
Yeah.
The access data in that duration of 3 weeks was 4 gigabytes, but the total size of the storage, all the data was about 150 gigabytes or something like that. So the argument here is that, your active data should ideally reside in the cache.
All right.
And so we picked the cache size is 4 gigabytes. But I think when we moved from 2 gigabytes to 4 gigabytes, there wasn't much change in the miss rate, at least for some part of
the
initial part of
the
quiz.
Yeah,
yeah, so even 2 gigabytes may actually be adequate, but we don't know. But we chose 4 gigabytes just to be safe.
Right.
So we chose 4 gigabytes, and then we computed these averaged miss rates, and then out of the average miss rates, we computed derivatives.
Right. That's the derivative.
These are the derivative plots.
Right.
And as you can see, the derivative is also pretty spiky. The goal was, the derivative was, if we had clean lines, then we could detect phases.
Yeah.
But that's not
happening.
So the single
threshold seems to be difficult. Well, first of all, do we have ground truth for this data?
There
in
is
the
no.
sense that we know that at a certain point that there is...
No. There is no...
Right.
The problem is there is no ground... There is no... I mean, we
maybe
have
they are
define.
All phase changes. I mean, that's what I mean, that's the thing is that, and then, you know, how do you, it's hard to say right now is whether this is what we're expecting to see in terms of determining the phase change. They are all phase changes.
I mean, if you define
change.
If you define phase change based on these plots, then you're absolutely right. I think one of the challenges with this work is, you know, how do we define a phase? What is a phase? And in my mind, at least, the concept of a face is actually tied to the size of the cache itself.
Right.
So you may have lots and lots of variations in how you access items within the cache. But if you are accessing items within the cache, maybe some items are being accessed more frequently than others, and you're going through some smaller faces there, from that cache's standpoint, they don't constitute phase changes because everything that is being accessed is within some larger working set.
So I sort of have a slightly different view of this. I think the phase is a different application, right? It's basically, well, the true root reason for the phase is because of application behavior changes, right?
Right.
So access behavior change or change of applications, the combination of applications, they change. So there is
right.
sort of a, you can say that the access pattern changes.
Right, but the thing is that, I mean, phases are more complicated, right? It's not, we cannot talk about as a single sequence of phase changes because even within a larger
right.
phase, there are many smaller phase changes if you look at a smaller granularity. And if you go down even further, then there are more phase changes going on there. So that's why I said, when we talk about phase change, we should also think about the cache level. Because
right.
the size of the granularity at which we are detecting phase changes only makes sense when we're talking about granularities which are equivalent or comparable to the cache size.
Right, yeah. So I mean, that manifested itself because of the cache size. And what I see is this. With a cache, remember, a given size, a given policy, right? So a phase change, there are two effects, right? One is that phase is never actually going to exhibit itself because the cache, this is large enough. It doesn't really matter. It's not pushing anything out. You know, that phase change is totally absorbed by cache. So the cache is like an average filter to some extent. It's like you come in, fine, and there's nothing. But the other part of possibility is the phase change being magnified by cache. Magnified meaning, yes, I pull you in. By the way, when I pull you in, I push everybody out, and that's magnified across all the applications running, and suddenly there's this huge spike, although there's this small things, a small phase actually being changed.
Right, but the thing is that pushing everyone out will only happen when your cache is actually really tiny. Right, so one axis pushing everyone else out would only happen if the actual size of the cache is so small that you can only contain very few items. And if you look at the granularity of that cache, it is a phase change.
Right.
Because you're accessing different items now than what you were accessing before. Right, so you can think of it as phase change being amplified, but I think the amplification that you see is at a different granularity, and at that granularity, it might actually be a phase change. So I think the challenge here is for us to determine. Could you open the door, please? Hello.
Just a room.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Yes, perfect timing. Have to go teach a class. So that's why I think that, you know, whatever data we are looking at, we have to bear in mind what is the size of the cache you're simulating, and based on the size of the cache, it is perhaps possible to define what a phase would be. And one view in my mind is a phase change requires a change of most of the items in the cache, say more than 50% of the items in the cache, then that would constitute a phase change. Or majority, maybe even more, maybe it's more than 75% of the cache.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's possible that you are within a phase at the granularity of the cache, but you just don't have a few items. Like the cache is just not large enough to accommodate the last few items. And then you will have misses. You will keep changing items, but we have to then figure out what is the threshold at which the number of items that are changing in the cache define an actual phase change versus just items that are part of the current phase but just don't fit in the cache. Right? I think that discussion is the most difficult to accommodate in by analyzing data. And I don't know how to do that.
So let's see. I mean, just follow this method.
Yeah.
Let's suppose these are old changes. I mean, we can put a threshold somewhere. I mean, obviously, just look at the figure in the center, right?
Yeah.
So that's very distinct, as a matter of fact. The phase changes. Right? There's you just look at that's the derivative. So it's higher than something. There's a quick change over a sustained period of time. There are a lot of changes over that period of time.
Right, you see there are some changes here.
Well,
right, which are tiny.
That's tiny.
Which are tiny. So the question is, are those phase changes or not?
Maybe that's not a big concern. I mean, according to your definition, right? It's if you don't have a certain percentage of change, these are derivatives. So it's the speed of things actually being replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the area, that will be how many things being replaced, right? So that's the for duration of time. If that's for example, the one in the middle, that spike, right?
You're talking about this guy.
Yeah, that spike,
yeah.
Right? That spike goes up very high. So that means the rate goes, the number of things being replaced, right? That's the derivative.
Yeah.
The miss rate is actually very high.
Yes.
And change the miss rate of very high.
Yes.
And it's sustained for a period of time. Right.
So yeah. So if the miss rate is very high for a period of time, let's say it goes up really high and then it stays there,
yeah.
The plot would look something like this, except that when it gets to zero, it should flatline at zero. So miss rate goes high, and then it stays high, which means that there is no change. Once it is up there, there is no change. So derivative should be zero.
Right, yeah.
Right?
Right.
Except that we are averaging.
Right.
So since we are averaging, our derivative is not going to drop down to zero immediately. It will slowly decay and go down to zero. And then stay. Once it gets to zero, it should stay there if the miss rate continues to be really high. Right? Does this make sense? Or?
Yeah, I'm not averaging.
You're not averaging here? I thought you were averaging.
Those aren't averaged. It was literally.
No, you're taking the plot, right? 1,000, 2,000, right? You took the original plot of
the miss
rate,
yeah,
which is the average result.
Yeah, that was already an average result.
Right. And then you take the derivative, right?
Yeah.
So I guess what I mean is that the original non-average miss rate, even if it stays up like that, the average miss rate is not going to be.
Oh yeah, the average miss rate is not going to change. So.
Well, the average miss rate will gradually increase and stay up there. Now, and since you're not averaging the derivative, I thought you were averaging the derivative at some point.
If I averaged derivative, it would change very,
very
little.
Gradually.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so then if you don't average derivative, then there should be a immediate drop once it flatlines. Right?
Pretty
then,
much, yeah.
But
actually,
but that's okay. If you have a miss rate very high, are you caring about during the, for example, right? So if you,
this is a mystery, right?
Yeah.
If somehow this is the going, you know, it changes and going very high.
Yeah.
And but that if you take derivative, of course, this is very high. There's a spike.
Yeah.
And this is going to be zero, right?
Yeah.
This is just a spike here.
Yeah.
But that's what we want, because we want to identify a shift. What's after this is not a shift.
Yeah.
Is the sort of byproduct of because of the pivot shift that you sustain the miss rate.
Yeah.
It's a lot of
that's
things.
Yeah.
So this plot shows us if it's something really high, that shows up there is a significant changes, right?
Yeah.
And we don't want to look at negative values. That means this is the miss rate drops. Drops simply because of maybe the cache start to already load up all the new stuff, which we don't care, right? So
good point.
That's part of the phase. Yeah.
Mm.
Right. Mm. Okay, so that's good. I'm glad we have some more clarity here. That's good. So what we found here was that there were some smaller spikes and some larger spikes,
right? Mm-hmm. So that some changes very miss rate changes very fast, some changes very slightly over time. Right.
Yeah, something like that. So the question is, I mean, and there's this other dimension, which is once you have a change in miss rate, then you load up the phase. How long does the phase actually last? If the phase doesn't last too long, then is it really a phase?
Right.
Or just a perturbation in the existing phase? So I think that was the other question we were trying to deal with.
That is not going to be seen here. I mean, not going to be seen by either this plot or a miss rate plot. The reason for that is there is a reason for the miss rate to go up. That's because your stream, the I/O stream changed, the nature of the I/O stream changed. You're accessing somewhere else that has to be brought to cache.
Yeah.
After that is the effect of eviction and replacement, all those sort of the combination of what the cache behavior would be.
Yeah.
So sustain how long?
Yeah. If you sustain a long time, then you have several possibilities. One is that you are within the phase, but your cache is not large enough to accommodate all the items that are being accessed.
Right,
then what you'll have
is
a steady, constant miss rate or something.
Right. It's just that you got like streaming, right? So
if it's a constant, approximately constant miss rate, the derivative should be close to zero.
Right.
So, or if it's a zero miss rate, if you accommodate everything in the cache, miss rate is zero, again, constant, derivative is zero as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, ideally, what we should see is spikes and a spike going up and coming down and then zero, right? And then again, the same thing. In the derivative plot.
All we need to see is the y-axis.
Is the forward spikes.
It's a forward spike. As long as these go up there, that means there is significant positive change, positive potential miss rate. So that's a lot of changes and misses happening during that time. That's being recorded. And for the others, I don't think we need to deal with it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm just concerned that some of the smaller spikes are in-phase behavior within the phase, and trying to see how we can think about them, because it's not a perfect world, right?
Right.
I mean, there will be slow increase in miss rate even while you're up.
I have an idea here.
Yeah.
So just look at the middle plot, okay? Just that plot.
Mm-hmm.
Just pick anyone, right? And that plot shows some phases, right? So anything you draw a line, say 10, right?
Yeah.
So, y equal 10. I mean, perfect flat. And then we can identify a few, right?
So you mean chop?
Just chop there, and we got identified. If you chop lower, like 5, you look at more, right?
Mm.
So now the question is whether we need a concern about those things lower as significant phases, or whether those phases need to be sort of identified
as a significant phases, right?
Well, the other thing is we do care about when a phase is populated. What I mean by that is when there is a phase change, your new items are being accessed, but then at some later point in time, all the new items are brought into the cache.
Mm-hmm.
We need to know when that happens. Because that is the time.
But that's exactly what it is. When you drop below that, that means you brought in.
Right.
Right. So if you just look at the biggest spike, okay?
Yeah.
And then drop that with x equal y equal 10. That the,
and so, that, so there is... So
there is a... One enter above the threshold, and there is a time it leaves that.
Yeah.
Right? And when it leaves that, that means the miss rate start to come back, right?
Mm.
So the rate changes. Is that right? Not so fast. It start to maintain a certain speed of being, cache is gonna, keep replacing.
Mm.
But it.
Mm. I see. Okay, so you're saying that the width of this peak would be the duration of the population of the cache. Okay, that's possible. Because at this point, when all the items are brought into the cache, then we had to, that's when the new cache replacement policy would kick in. Say stop doing anything until you see a significant increase in the miss rate once again, which tells you that it's a new phase.
Mm-hmm.
So we need not just the beginning of the phase change event, but also the end of the phase change event. It's before you get into the phase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that's what
right,
we actually
yeah.
did.
That's
we
yeah.
actually talked about creating a threshold and
right.
chopping off
right.
everything
okay.
above.
So
everything below a certain level.
I have another.
So should we look at that chopped data?
Well, just one more thing before
hmm.
turning the page. This is for 4 gig,
hmm.
right? This is for 4 gig.
Hmm.
If you want to identify small
hmm.
phase changes. Right.
Yeah.
You
then
say
yeah,
well,
there's a cache size.
Yeah, we have another cache overlap with this.
Yeah.
Right. And presumably, we're going to see a lot more spikes.
Yeah.
And those spikes should be contained in here.
Yeah. We do have the data for that as well because we did with smaller 2 gigabyte cache and 1 gigabyte
right.
cache.
So if you can overlap these three
one.
Together, mm. just the derivative, overlap the three together and see what, that's confirmed one thing,
mm.
is we're looking at the cache granularity of 4 mm. gig that identifies certain
mm.
phases,
mm.
right? But 4 gig does not necessarily, because the cache absorbs, right?
Yeah.
So absorbs.
Yeah.
And in that case, if you want to review
yeah.
more phases as the sort of a source of the application behavior.
Right.
We look at other cache.
So
sizes.
You're saying let's do a view where we overlap this derivative plot at 4 gigs with 2 gigs and 1 gig derivative
right.
plots.
And see whether
see what,
yeah, yeah.
I agree. I think that would be interesting set of comparisons to do. Okay, so now after we eliminate.
So this is the chopping result.
Yeah. After you
yeah.
chop the result, what does rank mean?
By rank, I simply mean that 2 is if it's above the threshold, the
mm.
highest threshold, and 1 is just it's in between. 0 is it's below the low. So it's just 3 positions that can be 0, 1, or 2.
Okay. So 1 is between 5% and 20%?
Yeah.
Okay. And
okay.
and because 25% is the maximum derivative value
for what I was using for the
yeah
right. yeah okay.
So that's 2. That's up here. Is that the entire week or entire day?
Yeah, it's the entirety.
Entire day.
Yeah.
of, so that's trace one. That means day one of some trace.
I simplify the name.
And this is
the homes dot whatever dot one dot block parts and all that.
Okay, so this is trace one, and then you have trace until trace 21.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 19, 20, 21. The last few days are not as active as the first few, which is interesting.
Well, there's not as many, there's not as many things as it. The last couple of days are a lot shorter.
Oh, there are fewer accesses.
Yeah.
I wonder why we got that. Anyway, it's something else to worry about. So, for instance, here, in this entire day, it seems like it would be completely contained in a 4GB cache. But there is some misses here. It's not clear about that. And you're still preserving the width of the spike?
Yeah, it should still preserve the width of the spike.
Okay. Okay, this is interesting.
I'm pretty sure that my code should preserve the spike, yeah.
Because of the width of the spike.
As long as it's above that 5% threshold, it should be there.
But this is good. This is all the rates, right? This is all the phase changes. All of them.
And then we can also cross compare
these
with
these are the phase changes that are above 5%.
Yes. I mean, below 5%, let's suppose that we don't really define that as a phase change.
It's
right.
Not clear what that means anyway. We'll think
right,
about
yeah,
that later.
Let's think about that later.
Yeah.
And then these are all the particular quick, you know, miss rate changes.
Yeah. There seems to be a 0.5 somewhere. You see?
I think that's just the
optical
new plot going from 1 to 0. Yeah.
Oh.
Sorry. There's not actually a 0.5. It's just the plotting.
Or you think the resolution of the image is not good enough? Or something is wrong with the new plot then? Shouldn't
no, it's
be
just
like
the
that.
Resolution. Well, don't forget it was a rate of 2,000, so technically there's a spacing between for the derivatives.
Well, then it's the resolution of the image.
Not necessarily. It's also the resolution of the data that I have for the derivatives. Since it's every 2,000.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, but I thought you had only 3 ranks.
Yeah, I do. It's just, it's still going from, let's say, 0 has a rank of 2. And 2,000 has a rank of 1. You still have a bit of that going on, right, in between, as it just changes the values. So there's still a slight slope because there's a space of 2,000 between the two values.
Right. I understand if it's not vertically down, that there'd be some slope, but I'm expecting it to be a gradual slope as opposed to see the 0.5 dominantly, right? There is this 0.5 level here that I see, at least. Maybe something is wrong with my eyes.
No, it looks like it's there. Like I said,
that's probably the resolution of the
raw data.
On the plotting.
If we have raw data, we can take a look at that right away.
The raw data is at the computer.
Okay.
Right.
Well, I actually need to be
yes.
somewhere else in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh.
But
okay.
But this is good. I think this is a good start. That.
I was hoping that we'd cross-reference with the miss rate.
Okay, let's look at one of them. Maybe the simplest one. Let's look at this guy.
Which one's that?
Well, actually, this guy. This is simpler.
13? Okay.
Actually, hold on. Let's look at this one because it has a few more number twos. Trace 10, right?
Trace 10.
So trace 10 has one spike, two spikes. Until 50,000.
Yeah.
One is at level 2, the other is at level 1. Okay. So, you have to look at derivatives or no? No.
Well, those are just
you
taken
to
from
look at the risk rates.
So we're looking
10.
At 10, which would be that one. And if we cross compare them, we can see that there are a couple positions where.
There are two.
And here are the three big spikes that we have in those are the three twos right there.
Okay, yeah. And then what about this guy? This is a smaller spike.
Once again, it's taken from 2000, so because it's a slow increase at that rate,
is this directable? Is this
directable? Is this miss rate?
This is averaged miss rate. Averaged at the granularity of 8,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the, all the quick increase are those that we're looking at.
Yeah.
The upslope that we're looking at.
Yep.
So
there are three more here, and then there's hardly any down here.
So I mean, this might be increasing at a very nice rate. It just might be a little bit less than 20%.
This one?
Yeah, that one too as well.
Or this one, and both of them actually.
Yeah, I'm talking about that one.
Okay, so let's go back here.
You can see the three big spikes, the smaller ones.
There are two smaller ones here. Two smaller ones, right?
Yeah, right there.
Two smaller ones. Two smaller ones. Where are they? Let me see the positions. It's hard to make out.
It looks like 100,000 or so.
100,000? On either side of 100,000 or
yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Oh, this is 1,000.
Okay. So, the worst possibility is that it increased about here, got the derivative of that, and then might have.
So, you're saying there are two.
Like, okay, right about there, and then see how it seems like the miss rate drops a little bit at a certain point, just ever so slightly.
Yeah.
That might have affected the derivative ever so much.
Okay, so I think we need additional filtering here, which is if there are two spikes which are very close to each other, then it's probably just a single spike.
Yeah.
Then it's probably just a single phase change event, then two phase change events.
Okay.
I think that's an additional filter that we might have to add. And one, maybe one hint for us to separate out the frequency of phase changes is to say, well, how long does it take to populate the cache? So if we say that a phase change is when the cache gets completely replaced, almost replaced, let's say 80% replaced, then it takes a certain amount of time to replace, or a certain number of accesses to replace those.
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah.
So
we could separate out our spikes, we filter out spikes that are too close.
So you're talking about the size of the working set.
Yeah.
Right.
So is it possible that instead of one spike, you get the cache warm-up phase? It's actually not all together, it's spread out a little bit, so you have a ramp in the miss rate, and then suddenly the workload starts accessing the items that it just brought in, and then suddenly it accesses the rest of the phase and maybe does it not just twice but multiple times before it brings in the entire phase. It's opposed to the conventional definition of a phase where you just bring in all the items of a phase and then you start accessing them and then you go on to the next phase and do that almost immediately. In real workloads, that doesn't happen. In real workloads, you have a more pesky phase behavior.
So, Steve, you have your code actually.
Yeah, I have that syncing with the Dropbox can.
Well, one thing which we should do now is to create a Git repository, which we have a Git server in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
And host all your code there, so that we can both of us can take a look at it,
mm-hmm.
give you some feedback, and there will be more people joining this project. I'm expecting soon, so they can also collaborate with you.
If you can, once you've done that, just send us an email.
We just need to figure out how to get access.
Get in touch with Leonardo in the lab, and he'll help you set it up.
Okay, I guess you need to go teach, right?
I need to eat lunch, and then I get to go teach.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah,
we...
The same time every week works. 11 a.m.
Uh-huh.
And if it works for you guys, then
perfect.
Sounds
good.
Sounds good.
Sounds good. All right.
Okay. See you later.
See you.
It's always nice to see you.
Good to see you, Stephen. By the way, my, you know, Namita told me how you were very helpful with what they were doing. I think they're still stuck with
some. Yeah, they're stuck with something. I was going to go back tomorrow because I heard from Michael that she tends to go more Monday, Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I thought I'd see her tomorrow if I could.
Yeah. Well, I think all she wants is to, it's a pointer to where she can. The way she was describing to me was is that she needs some male pins for the serial port. And she bought some, but they don't work. And they're not the right size. They don't go into the serial port.
Oh, they don't?
Yeah. So I guess what she's really looking for at this point is to buy the right stuff so that when you come back next, you don't waste your time. So if you can point her to... Now, what kind of pins she needs to buy? So, which word?
I didn't realize it. Well, I saw what she got, and I was actually really surprised because that's a good solution to what I was talking about.
Mm. So, there are a bunch of female pins, I'm assuming, at the serial port connected to the machine, right?
Yeah.
And what you're saying is just connect the.
I imagine now that's all that's really needed, but
yeah.
I don't know. It sounds like she. Has some other issue, or the pins that she has are too big or too small,
yeah,
or
yeah.
something.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if you have any sense for what are the right male pins to buy for that sort of a serial port. No idea.
I haven't had any experience plugging things into serial ports before, but I mean, it. I knew that it could be done because I've seen
other people do it, and I've seen that too.
Yeah.
But I think the real challenge now is to identify the right male pins.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's what they're struggling with. And maybe you can do some research and give them some pointers about that, because I don't think they're qualified to do it by themselves.
Yeah, I figured that.
Yeah.
I gave some advice as to what pins to put it in.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's really what they're looking for. And that's what I understood.
Alright, yeah. I guess I'm going
to... this is going great, and this project is going well, I think. I think we are making some progress. Now, whether we are making the right progress or not is a different question altogether, which we might have to revisit at some point.
Yeah, I gotta figure out how to do that filtering, how I should be approaching it, possibly...
I think
pick
one,
a certain size, because...
So let's say that the cache is 4 gigabytes, right?
Yeah.
To populate a 4 gigabyte cache with 4 kilobyte blocks, how many accesses, actually how many misses do you need? Right, that's really what would separate a face out from another face.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a total number of misses, of, you could approximate that to accesses if you want, but that's could be a significant approximation. But 4 kilobyte times... 1 million is actually a gigabyte. And I don't know if we have a million accesses in our traces. Do we?
For most of our traces, we have
about 2 million,
yeah.
Just about a million. So that argument really doesn't work.
So, I mean, with catching those spikes and trying to filter them out, I might have to just try and work with a certain size.
A smaller cache?
Well, I wasn't talking about cache. I was talking about places that I've been getting the derivatives from.
Mm.
So since it's every 2,000, if I look at 5 and see if if there's more than one, I guess, or two in there, that I could start trying to input, getting rid of some zeros or something similar to that, since it should be part of the same spike. It would be between, since it's at skipping 2,000 each, with 5, it'd be...
10,000,
yeah.
10,000 accesses.
Yeah, it'd be over to 10,000 accesses that I'd be looking over.
Okay. Well, I think that would be, that would certainly be necessary, but I don't know if it'll be sufficient.
I should look through a larger amount, is what you're saying?
I don't know, because, I mean, based on my calculation, it seems to replace a cache of 4 gigabytes, you need a million axes. But that doesn't make much sense, actually, because you may not be replacing the entire cache.
That's the biggest.
You may not even be using the entire cache.
And then with the derivatives, we might not have an extremely different increase in miss rates based on wherever our base is at the moment. So it could be 20 and then go up and go back down and not see a full 100% cache replacement if it just spikes quickly.
Yeah.
And this is once again also averaged. So
I don't know. I don't want you to be, you know, because we've already been averaging and playing around with, you know, threshold, so there's already a lot of heuristics going on here. I would say for now,
I'll definitely do the derivatives on smaller caches. So
yeah,
I'll see that overlay. I haven't heard much, but I think I could do the overlays.
No, Gnuplot will just, if you provide, let's say, three sets of files, it'll plot all of them in different colors or shapes or line types and things like that.
Yeah, all right. If I do that, I'll need to include the key.
Yeah.
For the most part, it's been one data set, so
yeah.
I just included in the title.
Yep.
But yeah, I hope I didn't confuse you by saying trace one or anything.
No, it's not. It's
I just
pretty reasonable.
I just didn't want to type out the entire file name again.
No problem.